Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello everybody, producer Al here. It's time for another TSFP Presents re-release here on the Monday podcast feed. Today's episode was originally released for patrons over at patreon.com/TSFP back in 2018. Our latest re-release series is classic teams. We've already looked at Super Depor, we've looked at Barca's dream team. Today, it's the turn of Real Madrid, one of their most fondly remembered sides, but also a team that never won the European Cup. It's La Quinta del Buitre. Enjoy.
Hello patrons, welcome to episode 3 of TSFP Presents Classic Teams. After talking about Super and Euro Depor in the first episode and reminiscing about Johan Cruyff's dream team of Barcelona in the second episode, the third chapter in this season of TSFP Presents Classic Teams is about one of the most iconic teams in the history of Real Madrid, the Quinta del Buitre, which won 5 consecutive La Liga titles, but curiously enough, never won the European Cup. And for a club as closely linked to the European Cup as Real Madrid, it's interesting that a team as iconic as this is so fondly remembered, and yet they never actually won the European Cup. Today I'm joined by Dr. Sid Lowe, a renowned Hispanist and Real Oviedo fan. Hello, Sid.
Hello,
thank you very much for joining us.
Very much my pleasure.
Yes, and I'm also joined by Alex Kirkland, a regular contributor to the programme. Hi, Alex.
And I did just read the chapter of Sid's book about this great team, so I'm fully up to date on that basis.
Yes. If you want to not listen to this podcast and just read the chapter on Quinta del Buitre in Sid's book, you can do so, but hopefully this will be a complimentary oral aid to understanding the Quinta del Buitre.
It takes longer to read that chapter than it does to listen to this podcast. I would just listen to this podcast.
And it's not as fun.
Yes, we're going to condense it as well, but obviously Sid did write a book. It's called Fear and Loathing in La Liga, and it does have a very good chapter on the Quinta del Buitre. The name, Quinta del Buitre, why are we calling it the Quinta del Buitre? Why was it coined? Where did this phrase come from?
In essence, it's quite simple, but it needs a little bit of unpacking. Quinta del Buitre effectively just means the vulture squad. Now the Quinta refers
to... It's a good name. The
Quinta refers to a generation of people that graduate together, but it particularly refers to it in military terms. And bear in mind that this was an era in which everybody did military service.
Yeah.
So the people in your group at military service would be described as this is the Quinta. The Quinta also has the beauty of sounding of relating to 5.
Yep.
And so there were 5 of them. Although the person who came up with this title, which is a journalist called
Iglesias.
What's his first name?
Manuel
Julio
Paco.
César Iglesias.
There you go.
Sounds right. He came up with this, and he admitted that the fifth was kind of crowbarred in there, which was Miguel Pardeza. And Pardeza very quickly was gone.
And indeed, all 5 of them only actually played together in one game in the Copa del Rey in 1987 or something. So there is a bit tenuous, but it's a great sounding name.
Yeah. And the most famous photograph of the 5 of them together is actually 4 of them in Real Madrid kits and Pardeza in a Zaragoza kit. So it's before a game when Real Madrid played against Zaragoza. But, so that's where you get the Quinta bit from. And Buitre, meaning the vulture, is the nickname of Emilio Butragueño, who of course was the most kind of iconic of these players. And his nickname was Buitre fundamentally just because Butragueño, believe it or not, is actually quite difficult for a Spaniard to say, not just for us to say.
Oh, so it wasn't because he was a vulture feeding on scraps in the penalty area.
There was an element of that, obviously, but I think that was actually retrospectively applied.
It wasn't because he also looks a bit like a vulture.
Yeah, well, funny enough, there's an interview with him sometime in the 90s when he said, you know, at times he felt a little bit offended by this, but then he met a vulture, presumably for some photoshop or shoot or other, and he said they are actually Hermoso. They are beautiful creatures.
Because that's the thing, because I mean, he seems like quite, he's quite a polite little, smart little guy. And I think of a vulture as being quite a sinister animal. So in that sense,
and he was the opposite. He was the he was an artist as well. And the way that he played, and this feeds into this whole thing about the Quinta Vulture, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But he played on tiptoes. He was technique. He was talent. He was little. He was, it was all imagination. You know, his dad's shop is still just off Granvia. You can still go in there and buy perfumes off his dad's shop.
Yeah,
really?
Perfumería Butragueño, just off Granvia, alongside pretty much one of those little side ones that goes alongside Casa del Libro.
Wow,
talk about Rincón Cultural. We've got to go and get a photo of that.
Yeah.
Maybe get some perfume.
Buy some perfume there one Christmas, and he sold me some whitening toothpaste as well. He was saying, this stuff's amazing, take it, try it, you'll love it. He actually looks like Emilio, quite a lot like Emilio.
Emilio Butragueño, who is currently Real Madrid's Director of Institutional Relations.
Still quite good at football as well. When he comes off the bench in the Legends games for the last sort of 10 or 15 minutes, he hasn't quite got the legs, but he's still got that knack of finding space inside the box.
He's also remarkably fit, given his age.
Yeah.
Not an ounce of fat on him.
Right, he is a very slick man still. Speaks very good English
very good English.
And he's a very good Director of Institutional Relations, basically. So the other players in this Quinta, in this squad, so we have Emilio Butragueño, we have Miguel Barteza, who really isn't necessarily a big part of it.
Although he's a PhD, so I quite like that little snippet of information about
him.
He's
got a PhD, hasn't
he? Yeah.
He was involved up until relatively recently with Real Madrid, wasn't he? He was the
He was a sporting director effectively. Yeah, although not really a sporting director anyone listened to.
No, and he was sort of shuffled out and never to be seen again. Anyway, Michel, obviously, housewife's favourite, Manolo Sanchis and Rafa Martin Vazquez were the other players in this team. But obviously, they weren't the only players in this team, naturally. There were other big names who were part of this team in the Quinta del Buitre. I guess it was a blend of youth and experience, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing is, it was a team that shifted. So the Quinta del Buitre team that wins the first league in 86 is very different to the one that wins the last league in 1990. And obviously, I suppose the really defining player in this era that's not one of those five is Hugo Sanchez. And Hugo Sanchez, in a way, is the complete opposite of these guys. So one of the things that makes the Quinta del Buitre so important is the way that it feels like it fits its generation. So Jorge Valdano, for example, who played with them, describes them as the sporting arm of the Spanish transition, to democracy after the death of Franco. And that in the 80s, there's this kind of explosion of kind of creativity in the arts, in film, and obviously Almodovar is kind of like the poster boy of what was known as the Movida Madrileña, Madrileñan movement of basically of hedonism, effectively, not really of anything else, but it is kind of a creative explosion, a sense of an artistic outpouring that after 40 years of dictatorship, people want to express themselves and be free. And this was seen as, if you like, the footballing version of that. And this is a team that I think, in that sense, in footballing style, is closer to the dream team than some of the other Real Madrid teams, and that is kind of part of a process that perhaps eventually leads us to Spain in 2010 at the World Cup and so on, but very much a technical team. The other thing is, these are all youth team players, these are all local, these are all people who come into the team who have a belief in a certain way of playing. And if you listen to Emilio Butragueño, for example, he will tell you that football is an art, and that what really fulfills him is the sense of having done something, not just competed, but having expressed yourself. And yet, Hugo Sanchez comes along, and Hugo Sanchez is
Mexican.
First of all, Mexican, not Madrilenian. But also, and I hesitate to use this word, but I'm going to use it, very much a mercenary, very much, you know, a hired hitman. Bash, goal goes in. That's it. Comes from Atletico Madrid.
One touch.
No arson around.
Yeah.
And him, for example, he and Michel, for example, hated each other. And it's weird that this generation is defined by this Quinta del Buitre, but actually the last couple of years, you could actually make a case, I think, that says it's actually not the Quinta del Buitre in essence anymore. Mm. It's much more Hugo Sanchez.
And didn't he even suggest changing the name to La Quinta de los Machos?
De los Machos, which basically sums him up. I mean, Hugo Sanchez is Hugo Sanchez's best fan. And that was kind of part of the dynamic. But again, it will always be remembered as a Quinta del Buitre.
What was the season where he scored every goal with
1990.
One touch?
So he scores 38 league goals and every single one of them with a single touch.
That's just so perfect, isn't it? That's so brilliant. I love that.
And that really is that no pissing about, which is kind of, if you like, the absolute opposite of Butragueño. If you get a chance to look on YouTube, look up Butragueño's goal away at Cadiz. Where he kind
which
of
one?
The one where he tiptoes along the byline and kind of comes round a load of players.
That was his debut.
And it's, yeah.
That was his debut. He comes on as a sub.
Yeah.
They are 2-0 down. They win 3-2. He scores two goals and creates the other goal.
Yeah.
It, I mean, that's the best ever.
And
you could have
18.
A better debut, could you? It couldn't be better.
He's 18.
Yeah. That 1990 season, by the way, they set a new record of 107 league goals scored, never beaten until Real Madrid did it in 2012,
yes.
I think, with 121.
Yeah.
I suppose this all starts, obviously, in 1983 with the Real Madrid Castilla side that win the second division.
The only time they've ever done it.
No other youth team has ever won the second division before or since.
And it's also
A period of a period of crisis as well for Real Madrid.
Exactly, that's what I was going to say. That there's that quote, I think, in your book from Valdano saying, you know, Real Madrid at that point, it's hard to imagine it now, but felt like a club in decline. The glory days had gone. They hadn't won the league for a number of years. You'd had the Bas dominance in the early 80s. You had Barca there as well.
They'd been beaten as well in the European Cup final in 81 by Liverpool. Now, obviously, on one level, you might say, well, that shows they could come back, but it had taken 22 years for them to get to a cup final. And they get there in 81, and it's a really awful game. And there was a sense that that era was very grey. And so in the late 70s, for example, which is Vicente del Bosque's era, he always talks about the way that people looked at that team with a mixture of aprecio and desprecio, is his phrase. And they were known as the El Madrid de los García, the García's Madrid, because a whole load of them were called García. I think four of them, or maybe five, had Garcia as one of their surnames. And yet that was a way of saying, you know, these are just kind of average Joes. And then this Quinto Buitre comes through.
It's also not as good a nickname for a team. Yeah. You'd never have a classic teams episode about the Madrid of the Garcias,
true,
would you?
But then you get this team that comes through that totally blitzes them, not necessarily in terms of what they achieve, because actually Madrid were quite successful, but in terms of how it felt and how it felt like it mattered.
This team, as we said, won five consecutive league titles, 1986, 87, 88, 89 and 90. They won two UEFA Cups as well. They never won the European Cup. They lost in the semi-finals in the Champions League.
In three years in a row,
yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
Which
it's curious because they talk about one of the big things that's always said about this team is that they had the bad luck, and certainly Emilio will say this, and Michel says this as well, to have come up against that AC Milan team. This is the Sacchi era, and yet the team that really screws them over is actually PSV Eindhoven, who are probably the worst European champions of all time.
And on that run in that year, these are the teams that Madrid beat on the way through. They knocked out Napoli 3-1 on aggregate.
Maradona's Napoli, by the way, it's worth pointing this out, not just any Napoli.
They knocked out Porto 4-2,
who I think had been champions the year before.
Yes. They knocked out Bayern 4-3 on aggregate.
Who were Bayern?
In the quarters. And then, they get to PSV, and it by all accounts, they sounded like dreadful games.
Stecklenburg, I think, was the goalkeeper's name, but I can't remember, and he saves absolutely everything. And if you look at what PSV did, as I say, you know, when you say the worst European champion ever, basically they didn't win any games. They went through on away goals or penalties all the way through the final, and I think they might even have won the penalties, won the final on penalties as well, but Madrid just couldn't find a way through.
And yet, the fact that they didn't win the European Cup hasn't necessarily affected their legend, certainly among Spanish Real Madrid fans. This is the team, really.
Yeah, I think you're right, and you started at the start by saying this, and I think this is really significant. And when I spoke to people about this team, when I was writing about it, Valdano, for example, as I say, talked about this, and he was saying it. The thing is, this Real Madrid team never set foot on the summit, and for Real Madrid, the only summit is the European Cup. You know, the only thing that matters is that. And I remember interviewing Emilio Butragueño about this in a room at the Bernabeu, and on a plinth across the room was the European Cup, and I just thought, that is just cruel. Here we are talking about, see that big trophy over there that defines you, Emilio? You never won it.
Every day you get
to
look at
that. And yet, Emilio, and in particular Michel, who's very, very proud of this team. Michel is a brilliant person to talk to about this team. He keeps saying, but this is exactly the point you're making. He says, we didn't win that. And that was always set up as the only thing that mattered at Real Madrid. He said, but ask people about great Real Madrid teams and they'll say Di Stefano's team, and then they will say us, no one else. Maybe not, he said, not even the Galacticos, you know, that first Galactico era, which actually was a little bit probably overrated, but in terms of what they did and achieved and how they played and stuff. And he said, and yet we are there. And I think this comes back to how we started. It's because it was of a moment. It was because it was a brilliant team that didn't just win and won five in a row, which no one else had done, but the way they did it, the style in which they played, and that moment of this was a hugely socially kind of significant time for Spain, and in particular for Madrid.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonder Water. What makes Bai so great? It's simple.
from Raspberry Lemon Lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing Cherry and Palavo Pineapple Mango. Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonder Water. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
They are also recognised as having contributed massively to the identity, this idea that Real Madrid fans still go on about to this day whenever they lose a first leg by a big scoreline. This idea of the kings of the comebacks, La Remontada, the spirit of Juanito, all that stuff. This was a team that sort of lived by that and really added to that aspect of Real Madrid's identity.
Yeah, and it was the famous Juanito line when he after a game when they'd been beaten by Inter Milan, I believe. I think it was 3-1.
3-1.
I'm not completely sure. And he
you don't know. Come on.
he gets pulled over after the game and he decides that he's going to send a message in what he takes to be Italian, which of course is just Spanish with an Italian accent. And he says, 90 minuti nel Bernabeu son molto longo. 90 minutes in the Bernabeu are very long enough as you wait to the second leg, sunshine. And so it was. Although actually that whole Remontada thing go back to Derby County in 75, I think.
In that same season, in that same UEFA Cup run, a couple of rounds previous to that, they'd beaten Borussia Mönchengladbach as well. They'd lost 5-1 to Borussia
5-1
Mönchengladbach.
5-1 in the first leg to lose.
And they won 4-0 at home.
That's remarkable.
So yeah, and yet every time now that Real Madrid lose a first leg, the spirit of Juanito is invoked.
Well, and as we've discussed on the pods, you know, many times, as it doesn't happen or as many times as it does.
No, but it only needs to happen a couple of times and it feels huge. And of course, in their case, I think it's happened maybe 4 or 5 in total. And the curious thing, again, to go back to this idea of this was an artistic team, an expressive team. Actually, if you talk to the players about the comebacks in particular, they had this kind of idea, which was, right, we go out there and we kick the shit out of them. Mm. And we go flying into the first tackle and we go flying at them and we're aggressive and we swear at them in a tunnel and we spit at them. And genuinely nasty. And yet this was the artistic side because they had one or two of those as well. I mean, Camacho, as I say, Hugo Sanchez comes a little bit later. Paco Bullo. I mean, Paco Bullo, yeah, is a couple of sandwiches short of a picnic. And they had that in their armoury as well.
We haven't really mentioned the coaches of these teams. Of course, it was a certain Di Stefano who gave the debuts to these to these youngsters, but it was then three other managers who went on to win these league titles.
Yeah, because Di Stefano was manager in 83 when they finished second in everything. Second in the league, second in the Copa del Rey, and then got, of course, beaten by Aberdeen in a European Cup Winners' Cup final. The day they lost the league, they thought they'd won it, and Juanito had promised to return to the dressing room on his knees to celebrate them winning the title. He is literally on his way there on his knees when they find out that Real Sociedad have just taken the title.
Do we talk about Juanito?
Well, I mean, we can do.
I mean,
he's not really emblematic of this team as such.
And yet he is arguably one of the most emblematic
of that
era. Players.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a player who, by all accounts, everybody loved him. But he was also completely crazy and did a few very bad things, including stamping on Lothar Matthäus' face. And when I say stamping, I mean genuinely stamping on Lothar Matthäus' face, not treading on it gently. And he is really liked. I think, obviously, one of the things with him is that because he died young in a car crash, obviously that increases the sense of legend and so on.
Mm-hmm. The fans at the Bernabeu obviously chant his name every single game in the seventh minute. Which was his number. But yeah, obviously he was part of this team and worth just mentioning him.
Santillana as well, who was a brilliant, legendary header of the ball in particular.
And some of these obviously, they kind of bridge over into the back end of the 70s and early 80s, just before this side. So obviously some of these played in the 81 European Cup final, as is the case of Camacho, for example. And that is also the era in which Real Madrid reach the Copa del Rey final and play against their own youth team. But it's not that youth team that gives you this. But it is that youth team, if you like, that gives that sense that actually there are people coming through here. There is something building. And as you say, Di Stefano gives them the chance. They're playing under Amancio in the B team. Di Stefano gives them a chance, in part because, well, he says, all you have to do is put the kids in. I asked him this, and I said, well, it's not just that simple. He said, all right, then you've got to have the bollocks to keep them in. But really and truly, you could see them. You could see how bad the first team was. Of course, they were going into the side.
One detail I was amazed to discover was that back in those days, Castilla used to play at the Bernabeu, and 60,000 people used to go and watch them.
Yeah,
imagine that now.
And of course, because
60,000
because they got to the Copa del Rey final. And obviously didn't win it, but because Real Madrid went into the European Cup, they played the Cup Winners' Cup the next year. They played against West Ham. It's Castilla brilliant. Played against West Ham.
Yeah.
Beat them, I think. Billy Bonds was in that team. Billy Bonds and Frank Lampard Sr.
And so this team won, as we said, they won 5 league titles in a row up until 1990. What happened then? Why did it come to an end? And why were they superseded by the last team we did in this series?
Yeah, well, that's essentially why, at least according to Mitchell. And he says that, you know, that team, he said, we could sense that there was a brilliant team building, and we were knocked off the top by a team that did a lot of the things that we did, that took on a lot of the idea of technical, talented football, creative football, but that were just so good that ultimately we couldn't compete with them. And Mitchell's point, and we, you know, I know this is bridging the two programs a little bit, but we talked about this a little bit with the Dream Team. That Real Madrid team then lost two league titles to Barcelona on the final day in Tenerife both times. And Mitchell's version of events is that, yeah, but the miracle is we even got there. They were so much better than us. And also that the emotional impact of failing in the European Cup, not so much against Milan, but against PSV, was kind of the end. You know, there was this sense that you keep winning the league, but if that thing, that kind of holy grail is kept away from you, the emotional impact, the psychological damage it does to you is enormous. And of course, as Mitchell said at the time, and still insists now, there was a moment when he gave some back to the fans who were having a go at him. And this point then, he said at the time, was, look, you seem to think that winning the league is easy. You know, we won it 5 years in a row. We will have to leave. We will have to be gone for 15 years before people look back and realise how good we were. Which is interesting that he didn't feel appreciated maybe at the time, partly because of the nature of the way that he is as a personality. But he was right.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because he's very opinionated. He's very clear about a certain way of playing. There's that sense that I think a lot of people dislike because he's incredibly well turned out. Mm. He's very handsome. He's very kind of sure of himself, and I think that goes down badly with some people. I don't think it necessarily should, but I think it does.
And to go back to his point, I mean, look at La Liga since, look at the Champions League the year since, and no one has done it since. No team has dominated domestically with the consistency that this team managed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why, as you were saying, Phil, I guess this, well, where do we put this team in the all-time Real Madrid sides? I guess the Di Stefano Madrids are up there as number one.
Well, I mean, I guess in terms of sort of legend and iconicness, yes. In terms of actual sort of skill and ability, and if they could come up against each other, obviously we're sort of, you know, going into deeply hypothetical scenarios, sure. But they'd give each other a pretty good game.
Oh, it'd be brilliant. I mean, it'd be lovely to see this team with obviously the nature of football has changed physically, but it would be lovely to see this team, for example, against the current Real Madrid team, or this team against Di Stefano's team. But you know, football has changed so much that it's very difficult to ever draw that parallel. But I think in terms of the way they express themselves and the excitement they created, I think they're second only to Di Stefano's team, and I actually think maybe even more so, because I think there was a sense that they were doing something new and different, whereas Di Stefano's team, I think while it was happening, perhaps there wasn't always that awareness. And it's very interesting hearing from Barcelona players of that era thinking they were better than Real Madrid domestically, which they were. And so, whereas this team, there was, you know, the league is the closest you can get to an objective measurement of truth.
Or even more so, given the way the European Cup used to be, because it wasn't the Champions League of now. As we've said, you didn't have to play that many games to win the European Cup, and depending on the draw, you could go up against some fairly ordinary teams on the way to winning a European Cup. So back then, the European Cup was even less.
That happened to Real Madrid 4 years ago. But yeah, I mean, and it's very difficult. But I think it is that sense of moment. And the iconography, I think obviously the Galacticos are up there because it was seen as ludicrously kind of resplendent, if you like, and ludicrously glamorous. But actually, in terms of going and watching them every week and what they were like, this team probably had greater coherence, more of a sense of identity perhaps as a collective than that Galactico team did. But as I said, there is a shift between it as well. I mean, that 1990 team is very different from the 86 team in terms of the way that it feels that they're playing.
We'll leave it there, I think, talking about the Quinta del Buitre, the Vulture Squad.
Sounds, it is a good name, isn't it?
It is a great name.
It's a really good
squad.
Name.
Give us your suggestions for other teams that we should cover on Classic Teams. We've got a list. We will keep adding to it, though, with the good suggestions. I'm not suggesting that this series is going to go on ad infinitum. We're going to do sort of six or seven or eight.
But we do have a lot of content to produce, and, you know, we're working within limitations. So.
Yes, so, you know, help us out. Give us suggestions, and we will take them all on board, and then we'll just do the ones that we want to do. But anyway, do tell us which ones you'd like us to talk about, and we'll see you next time. Adios.
Bye.
Cheerio.